And welcome back, footy fans, to another episode of Donnie's Disposals. I'm your host, Coach Donnie Hess, here back with another AFL round review. Round one, it has come, it has gone. We got to sit down and talk. There's been plenty of news going around the footy world, plenty of suspension, plenty of interesting things happening. So we got to sit down, we got to talk about it. And I have a perfect co-host hopping on the podcast, the man, the myth, the legend that is everything when it comes to Blue Abroad and talking the Carlton Blues, Mr. Terry Tagani. Terry, great to see you, sir.
Coach Hess, absolute pleasure. We're adding more and more layers to the story of you and I, more and more episodes. It's good fun.
Well, it's always fun. I truly appreciate what you do at Blue Abroad, and the fact that you've had me on the podcast to preview some Swans and Carlton games have always been fantastic. And I must say that with all of the things that Blue Abroad is doing is fantastic. I know that the Besties podcast has hopped on, kind of connected with you guys, and they're doing a fantastic job. A huge shout out to them. I try to listen to their episode too. Pommy in Oz is always fantastic. So loving everything that's connected to the Blues. I may not be a Blues supporter, but I always get a kick out of you guys' work and keep up the great work on that. So now that we've complimented each other, we'll get to the talk on the footy. So before we go through each game kind of and talk them out a little bit, just general thoughts on round one. Finally, all 18 teams have played a game.
Well, for me, living in Melbourne, it felt normal again. I'm not really, I was never against opening round. I liked that they were trying something different. But, you know, when you live in Melbourne, I mean, the soul of the city is in the footy. You know, Friday night or Thursday night, MCG, you look over the Yarra River, the MCG lights are on, and it's just, there's people everywhere all weekend. Good weather, nice and warm. I just, you know, the first few rounds, I spend a lot of time just being grateful to have it back. And, you know, I'm a very busy man. And what I mean by busy is, you know, feet up on the couch 3 games in a row on a Saturday afternoon. It's just pristine, mate.
Yeah, definitely, for sure. I know. Unfortunately, I don't have that luxury. Most of those 3 games on Saturdays are my Friday evenings from probably about 10:38 until about 3 in the morning. So
Wow.
sometimes it can be make for some long weekends, especially if you are like myself, had the Friday night footy, which starts at about 3:40 in the morning this week, and then there's 3 games from Friday into Saturday. Always fun, but let's get into this. We will start on Thursday night footy, and we get to talk about your beloved Blues as they find a way to win, to beat the Richmond Tigers by 5, 86-81. I must say, has your heart come back to normal beating speed? Because the Blues just keep finding a way to test your tickers for sure in Blues Nation.
Yeah, a really fascinating watch, stressful, and I felt like a lot of the stress was self-inflicted. You know, some of the errors. I spent the first 3 quarters really confident, even though that we were behind for the majority of it by a small margin. I still felt like we were the better side. Richmond were giving us all they were going to have, and eventually we would just figure it out with a 10-minute patch of good footy, like probably what we saw last, you know, the week before against the Lions. And the real stress probably came the last 5 minutes because some of these errors, and you see the patterns in games. You know, when your team's about to lose a game, you can see the errors that they make. And for all the errors that we made, we're able to still hold on at that last line of defense. You know, skill execution is still an issue. It has been for a long time, and it will continue to be until we figure it out. Ultimately, you get the 4 points. You get to the bye and you get out of there, and you know, footy's back in Melbourne, 83,000 odd at the MCG, so that was great. But yeah, not convincing, and everyone wants to win in a convincing way, but thankfully we didn't lose the game.
Well, I as a neutral, I watched this game and I went, if Richmond find a way to win this, it is going to be almost the steal of the century. Like I was with you. Like I was waiting for Carlton to just go, bugger this, let's go. And they never really did it. And I think that was the part that was really frustrating, because you look at it, Richmond had Gibkiss go down, Prestia go down. Like they had 3 injuries. They were down to 2 on the bench. And I was literally sitting there going, this is the perfect time for Carlton to just go, forget this. We are not going to lose this game, and just go. And it just never really materialized, I think, the way that you or even myself thought. Like, I legitimately thought Richmond is going to run out of gas. They did for the most part, but not in the way I thought. They really fought back in this game. So again, I have to hat tip it to Coach Uze and Richmond, because they never made this easy. And again, it's great to see Dusty back. I love watching Dusty play footy. Big Nank Curve is coming back. Like, this was much more the Richmond than I was expecting, more than the Gold Coast. Like, it was almost a shell of Richmond up at the Gold Coast. So this is a little bit more of what I expected. Again, Carlton just a little bit too good. Again, Richmond, this is almost an honorable loss. I know fans don't want to hear that. They don't want to hear honorable loss, but this was three men down, and to only fall short to a Carlton team that I legitimately think is going to be there when the whips are cracking come September. This is an honorable loss. I know they don't want to hear it, but legit loved this game. Very fascinating. We'll go to it. It's like I planned it this way. I really didn't. That my team, the Sydney Swans, find a way to kind of ruin, shall we say, the flag unfurling of Collingwood by getting a 33-point win, 102-69. But I agree with what some of my fellow Swans friends said, is that this game probably should have been almost 50. Sydney kind of let a couple of goals come late to Collingwood to kind of humor the final scoreline. But I was not expecting this. I legitimately was expecting this to come down to the fourth quarter. One of those Collingwood maybe finds a way to come back to win this game. But when they hit the three-quarter time break and they were up 45, I literally sat there and went, what am I watching? Because I legitimately could not believe what I was watching. So as a neutral in this situation, I know you're Carlton, Collingwood. So if you could just put that to the side for just a second, your thoughts on this, because I did not see this particular result coming. I thought Collingwood would bounce back, and it just didn't happen.
Well, I went to this game. I was there as well. I backed it up from the night before. I love the Swans. I love Errol. I love Errol. So any chance I get to go watch him play, I really enjoy it. To be honest, the first 5-10 minutes, I thought, oh, okay, Collingwood looks super sharp here, and they're just going to flick the switch. And then, you know, as the game goes on and as the war of attrition develops, I just overall, I mean, you can summarize it however you like. From my lens, it was just, the Sydney had seemed to have more running power, more mental application, a bit more motivation. I don't know if the Pies are a little tired, or, I mean, obviously it's, you're never going to be as hungry as what you are, you know, when, before you win your first premiership. So I don't know if there's a little bit of a lingering effect there, but they've got to find a new, the Pies look like a team that's got to find a new way to get themselves motivated, because I didn't see the same burst of running power that they've come to show us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you could kind of see it. I watched a few of the footy shows, and they showed like the defensive effort and the extra efforts that you saw last year in their pursuit of a premiership. They're not showing up, and this is 2 weeks in a row. And I agree with what one of them said, is that I'm not going to jump to the conclusion that the Pies are off and that we're having the premiership hangover. But if they don't show up against St. Kilda this week, then I think questions start being asked, and then maybe a pattern maybe showed. Again, we'll discuss that topic even a little bit more a little bit later. So, but again, I was shocked, pleasantly surprised, but shocked on that one. So we'll jump to the next one, which sees Essendon and Hawthorne in a very intriguing game. That one of those where I think Hawthorne's almost kind of kicking themselves, because if they could kick straight, they might have had a shot to win this one. Your thoughts on the Essendon-Hawthorne game?
A lot better of a game than what I thought it would be. I was really curious to see how that Hawthorne team would look with some of the injuries that they had. I know Will Day's out. You know, Jai Newcomb's probably the man in that midfield for the time being. He seemed to be pretty down on what he usually does, particularly tackle-wise. But I thought the way that the Bombers fed off their crowd, they look fit. I was pretty impressed with them. It's both teams for me. I left that game thinking, I don't quite know yet what you are, if you're going to be good or if you're not going to be good. But it was a good contest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm kind of the same way. Like, I'm, it's 4 points for Essendon. It's exciting to see Archie Perkins maybe get his run in the midfield. It was great to see him play well. It's interesting to see how's Essendon going to handle not having Darcy Parrish. The new Bombers with Mackay coming in. So this is an Essendon team. Like I'm kind of with you. I still have question marks. I still have, because of what I know of Hawthorne, I think they're still going to be scrappy, but I think the injuries are really going to cost them some games here earlier in the year until they get themselves a little bit more healthy. So I kind of walk out just like you. I'm not 100% sure. Are you a good team, or did you benefit from playing a team that has a lot of injuries? And I think it's not up to its best footy right now. So speaking of best footy, it is hard not to argue that this team, this next game showed what is hard not to say is the strongest team right now through the first couple of rounds. And that's GWS nearly getting 40 point win over the North Melbourne Roos, 121 to 82. The orange tsunami is here. It'll be fascinating to see, can teams figure out how to get through it? But this is one of those, the Giants just too good, and North still kind of trying to figure themselves out.
Yeah. No, they gave a bit of a fight North. They had some nice patches. They got some new guys in the team playing new roles. I think of my boy Zach Fisher. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the new boys come in, Colby McKercher, etc. The Giants, too skillful, and the running power is there for everyone to see as well. They've got a good combination of both, and they are making my preseason prediction of them slipping out of the eight look really silly already. It's only round one, mate. I've already got one completely wrong.
it's still early. There's still a lot of things to happen, but they were a very fashionable pick to be in the top four, and right now that they're proving many of those to be quite right on that one. Again, I agree with you. I loved Colby McKercher. I think Dersmo was really good. It's one of those. They just, Tom Green was absolutely ridiculous in this game. That guy is definitely making a lot of arguments to potentially be a Brownlow contender very, very soon, if not even this year for sure. So let's jump to probably one of the most exciting games over the weekend was the Geelong Cats holding on by eight over the Saints down in GMHBA Stadium. Finally, they got this darn stadium finished. I have to first say that, but it looked glorious. Like, I got to say, that stand looked absolutely glorious. Great that Selwood gets his stand. It's fascinating on that one. But man, the Saints showed if they can get their skills right, they're going to be dangerous because they can run, because they've got some real, real movers. No Sinclair in this game, but Liam Henry came in, looked really well. Saints really pushed a Cats team that I think kind of expected to win this one. They pushed them to the end.
Yeah. I mean, Ross Lyon coached teams, particularly in their second year together. They're always going to be disciplined. I was probably more impressed with the Saints than most teams this round, even though they lost. Mm-hmm. I just see that it's their first game. And generally speaking, you know, you're going to get a little bit better with every game that you play in the first month. And I just thought about it. I'm like, wow, they've got speed by foot. The way they move the ball is quicker than what I've seen them move it in the past. They've got all the elements. Seem to have all the pieces. They've got this undercurrent of some players that are coming through that have got real star potential. I think of Owens, I think of Winhager. Mm-hmm. I think an underrated signing that's going to come up for the remainder of the year will be Riley Bonner from Port Adelaide, who
now he looked really good in this game.
Yeah, so I was really impressed with him. The Cats were probably just more mature. You know, the older heads helped them get the job done. But I thought it was a cracking game of footy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember going on social media and talking with a few friends, because there was a couple of very well discussed incidents, including the free kick to Danger for below the knees, which that got a lot of people on that one. I can see it both ways. I can see the argument honestly both ways. I probably think that Danger kind of played the umpires a little bit personally. I don't think he got his legs taken out. I think he put a little lemonade and sauce on that personally, but he got the free kick, unfortunately. But, and then there was the tackle on Manna late in the game, where if you barrack for a certain team, you're screaming, holding the ball or illegal disposal. But I kind of almost forensically broke this one down. And I slowed it down just enough to show that the reason that the ball hit the ground was not because Manna dropped it. It's because the defender, who actually tackles him high because it goes over his shoulder, knocks the ball out of Manna's hand. And then Manna quickly kicks the ball off the ground. So it's one of those where it's like, I kept thinking, it's holding the ball. No, it's not. Because A, he gathers the ball and is tackled less than half a second after he gets the ball. So there's no prior opportunity. And they're like, well, then he didn't dispose of it correctly. No, because the defender knocks it out as he's trying to tackle. Because if you watch, Manna picks the ball up and his arm is perpendicular to the ground and the ball goes straight down and his arm never moves. So he doesn't drop the ball. And the ball comes down so much faster than if he were to just drop it normally. So it was the right call, but it looks dubious the way it kind of turned out. So it was a fascinating one on social media to go back and forth with some people, because I got a few people to agree with me. I'm like, if you look at it this way, which is sometimes fun on social media sometimes, but I agree with you. This was a fantastic game. I agree. Saints were impressive despite the loss, and to see Dempsey play really well for the Cats, they might have found themselves a hidden gem there. So the Cats are going to be an interesting team to keep an eye on as the year goes on. So we'll jump up to the Gold Coast. The score flatters this game. The score really flatters this game.
It because doesn't tell the story, does it?
It doesn't, because it was atrociously bad weather. I mean, horrible downpours in this game. And I have never an inept Crows team for three quarters almost got it done.
Well, I was watching the Saints Geelong game, and obviously it finished, and then I happened to tune into the entire fourth quarter of the Gold Coast Adelaide game, which ended up being an incredible watching experience for a quarter, because mm-hmm. the Crows just chipped away at it. And this is the second week in a row that the Suns have just, you know, got a nice big lead. I don't know how much to read into this, by the way, but you know, they did it last week. Their opposition came back into the game. I don't know if the conditions are, you know, a different set of circumstances for this game, but I mean, that was just one of those games. You just got to get the 4 points similar and just get out of there. It was good. I think it was important for Adelaide to not let that scoreboard stay the way it was. I mean, really low scoring shots. I believe it might have been less than five at three quarter time, potentially.
It was eight. I think it was eight at three quarter time. Okay. I'm almost positive.
For them, the way they generate you know, scoring opportunities, I think that's it just looked funny. It wasn't the LA that I thought we're gonna get this year. But fair play to the Suns, mate. At the end of the day, two wins. That's all that matters.
Eight was at halftime. 22. It was at 22 at three quarters.
Eight was at half. Okay, maybe that's when
yep.
I checked.
Yeah, because it was one. It was 1-2. It was 34. It was 5-4, 34 to 1-2-8 at halftime.
That's so, when I checked. Yeah, that's right.
It was mental. I could not believe what I was watching as I watched this game, because it was like it was an inept Crows performance again. They made it respectable at the end, but it's one of those, it's almost a little bit flattering with how horrible the Crows were there for the longest period of time. So, oh boy, what a fun one. So we'll jump to the Sunday games. And it was interesting to see an MCG based in Sun as the D's hosted the Doggies in a game that I was very interested in seeing, because the D's kind of had a few issues against the Swans. They come up against a Doggies team that selection kind of threw me off a little bit. Caleb Daniel is the sub. Jack McRae is not even playing at all. Riley Sanders debuts. Lockie Bramble comes in. And the D's just go, I don't think so. And win this by 45, 109-64. Ben Brown is back and kicking goals. Tommy McDonald is back and going back. I'm interested. Yes. Your thoughts on the D's, because this was a much better performance in the game against the Swans. Again, humidity and that, we'll take that into account a little bit, but this was much more a D's performance. And a lot of questions now on the Doggies is, did Bevo get it wrong at selection?
Well, I mean, the D's had to respond. It was very interesting to hear Max Gawn's comments after the opening round loss and how he felt he let himself down, he let the team down. So I was pretty confident that he would always respond. I mean, disclaimer, I'd have a fantasy draft, and our first two picks were Max Gorn and Clayton Oliver. So we're watching them just tear up. It was a phenomenal watch for a fantasy draft owner. But yeah, look, they just looked better. They looked like they had played a game the week before. The Dogs looked like it was their first game, to be honest with you. A bit of cohesion issues, I thought. But I think what can't be forgotten is that Melbourne at the MCG is a very tough ask. You know, they play it so well.
Yes, they do. They very much do. And when you've got superstars on two of your three lines, May and Lever are fantastic. Yeah. Oliver gone and Petrarca through the middle, with even Petrarca going forward. They're very good side. I just think they had a bad night against a team that figured out the conditions a little bit faster than they did. So I'm happy for the D's. The Clayton Oliver thing was awesome to see the D's fans get around him. That was really cool that they gave him a round of applause as he came off late in that fourth quarter. I tip my hat to you, D's fans. I know that there was a little bit of drama because with the camera where they were, that it looked like half the ground was empty, but then if you saw the cameras showing the side where the normal hard cameras were, it was filled. So it was a very interesting, odd visual to see the sun-baked part of the MCG almost empty. So it was a very fun visual. But yeah, a good game there. And I'm interested to see how the Dougies respond, because Caleb Daniel on the bench as a sub, little not 100% sure on that one, so we'll have to see. But again, I'm not there at training, so I don't know if he was having some struggles at training. I'm not sure. So we'll jump over to the Adelaide Oval, and Port Adelaide again continue the misery that is the West Coast Eagles with a 50 point win, 120-70, and we finally got to see Harley Reid in his first ever AFL game, and the young man didn't look too bad. Fantastic, but first game of footy, you're going to get a little bit of niggle from the opposite team, and I think he responded pretty well.
Yeah, he's just got a strong body. He'll be fine. He just needs a few games. This was a classic, Saturday Arvo game. Sorry, Sunday Arvo game where, you know, the scoreboard blows out and you tune out a little bit. You watch the first quarter and a half. The margin blows out, you know that Port Adelaide are going to win the game, and you just start doing your life admin. So I was in and out of this game, but yeah, I mean, what do you take out of it? I mean, I think it was good to see McGovern back in for the Eagles, and you know, if he's not there, and you know, they're going to struggle because he's just such a presence down back, and he reads the play so well. Really interesting to see Gaff and his performance, and they've already put it on the table that he won't play next week. I really do feel for West Coast, just because Carlton were there like not long ago. You know, we won two games in 2018, so it's tough. And do you think it's just the reality that there has to be one team or two teams every year that are in that situation that the Eagles are in?
It's really, really weird, because the West Coast Eagles kind of, they might almost be the architects of their own demise, because after 2018, they won the premiership, and you kind of understand they wanted to keep the veterans because they still felt they were in their premiership window. And 2020, ever since 2020, in the pandemic year, where they kind of, I mean, let's just be honest, they comped out when it came to the hubs in Queensland. And ever since then, there's just been this weird hex on them. It's like they just can't get anything right. They signed veterans they probably should move. It just seems like every decision that they make backfires on them. Like, some people could even say, well, would it have been a good idea to try to talk North Melbourne out of 2-3, draft Daniel Curtin, draft another West Australian, and try to build with multiple instead of just Harley Reid? And again, we'll never know. It didn't sound like North Melbourne was ever going to do 2-3, because they really wanted to at least keep one of those top five picks. But it's just, it's almost kind of fascinating to me that the West Coast Eagles are this very interesting case of, can they finally figure it out? Is it the coach? I don't think it's the coach. I really think it's the club as a whole. I think their list management has been atrocious. I think they've kept guys that they probably should have let go. You have the issue of Nick Natanui kind of never really finished his career. He just injury problems just kind of cost him his career. Elliot Yeo can't stay healthy. Like their best players cannot stay on the ground. And then because they were always in premierships or at least in the finals for the longest period of time, they have no young talent. They have no top 15 draft picks to go, hey, it's your turn. So they kind of are the architects of their own demise because they have not really prepared themselves for life after kind of that 18 premiership. And
so true.
And I don't know how to change it. Harley Reid's not going to fix it himself. They've got Oscar Allen, incredible talent, but he's got nothing around her. Petrocelli is too inconsistent. Liam Ryan can't stay healthy. Bailey J. Williams is not a bad rock, but he's not Nick Natanui, and he's undersized and under-talented compared to Gaughans, Grundys, McInerneys, Darcy's, the elite of the competition, and they don't have the Sarongs or the Brayshaws like Fremantle does. So it's like they're under and behind everybody. And unless they're going to get 2, 3, 4 first round draft picks or somehow find a way to trade for 2 or 3 really good veteran midfielders, I see this unfortunately happening for at least another couple of years until Harley Reid and they can get 2 or 3 drafts of top level talent into this list. And I know the West Coast Eagles are not going to be patient enough because they're a rich club. They have all this history. I think Simpson is going to find himself fired before the end of the year. That's just the way I see this happening. And I don't like it because it's not his fault that the club has given him, I mean, let's just be honest, a shit sandwich and told him to eat it and enjoy it.
Yeah, it's tough. It's super tough. It's hard to watch.
Nothing is as insanely weird as last year watching my club put 200 points on them and literally see them like witches hats the entire game. I mean, I literally sat there as 200 points went up and I went, I don't know if I should celebrate this or be ashamed. I wasn't sure. Like it was the weirdest sensation because the standard was just not there.
Yeah.
I don't know. So let's sorry, West Coast Eagles fans. I don't mean to pile on to
Coach Hess. It's giving him a piece of your mind, mate.
I'm honest as much as possible. And it's hard not to argue that that's the way it goes. So we'll jump to the other side of the West out to Fremantle, where I have to say this was not what I was expecting as the Fremantle Dockers knock off the Brisbane Lions 93-70, a 23-point win. And this is almost kind of a carbon copy of the game between Brisbane and the Blues. Brisbane jumps out to a nice little lead and you're thinking, Brisbane should win this relatively easy. And it's like they went, we're good, and just decided not to play good footy anymore. And Fremantle went, okay, thank you, and just ran right over the top of them. It was insane.
Yeah, I mean, the Lions were the beneficiaries of some free kicks early, I thought. They were pretty sharp early. And I mean, the Brisbane to Fremantle trip for a Brisbane Lions team, it's the longest trip in footy to go from Brisbane to Perth. So that's always a factor, but I didn't know if it would be too much of a factor for the first game. I mean, so early in the season. And I mean, Freo gets some horrific injuries and they still keep going. I was super impressed with them. They arguably were probably the most impressive team of the round for me. But it came at a cost. Like you lose three guys for a lengthy period of time now. I mean, Oscar McDonald, which is one of the biggest tragedies that I've seen for a single player, three clubs. As he gets to his new club, his first game for each club, he does some sort of a long-term injury. So, thoughts and wishes go out to Oscar McDonald. He obviously played at Carlton. Same thing happened. So that was a shame. Brennan Cox, the other one, that was awful. But you know, it's footy. It's a brutal game. It is a brutal game. And I actually wanted to ask you as well, do you think the bodies are conditioned? I mean, cause we're playing one less preseason game now and we're essentially going into the season a little earlier than usual. Do you think it's just a coincidence that we had a high number of big injuries and a lot of cramping this year?
It's hard not to argue that. I mean the facts right there is that you've had, what was it, you've had three or four big ACL. I mean, you lose Kitty Coleman, Sam Docherty, both in that game in Brisbane. You lose Gibkiss in that game between Carlton, and then you lose McDonald here too. So that's four ACLs just in the span of less than 2 weeks. Brendan Cox, horrible hamstring. You had a slew of a couple of very vicious concussions as well, but that might not be exactly what you're going through. It's hard not to argue that. But then again, no, I also kind of look at it too, is the way these athletes are conditioned, it's almost kind of like they are right on the brink because they're so athletic. They're so pushed to the max that they really are on it just a little bit too much. Boom, there goes a hamstring. Boom, there goes a knee. And I think that's kind of the thing that, like, you play on this knife's edge a little bit with this game, because not only it's physical, it's tough, but it's very, very demanding on the lower half of your body because of the running that you have to do, the conditioning that you have to do, that it's like, it really is. And I've noticed it even up here with American sports, is that the more these athletes get bigger and stronger and faster, the injuries almost get more devastating because there's so much force going into these bodies that I almost kind of look at it and I go, I agree with you. Like, I know the AFL will never do it. And I've said this numerous times. I would love to see them go to a 17 game season or 18 when Tassie comes in. You play everybody once and then you hit finals. They're not going to do it because there's too much money involved. And I think that's the frustrating part about it, is that you've added gather round. This year you didn't add a game, but you're adding more rounds technically to the season. You're asking for more of these injuries, and they complain so much that there's not enough talent to go around. There's not enough talent to add a new team. It's like, well, when you blow through 15 players in the span of 3 weeks because of long-term injuries, season-ending injuries, and the looming concussion issue, which is still kind of hanging over the AFL like a black clown, there's a lot of things that you sit there and you go, you almost kind of pray each and every game that nothing happens, because I mean, it's just right there. And it's kind of crazy to think. And again, you admire these guys for what they put their bodies through, but it is crazy. I could, you have a really good argument that maybe these couple of weeks earlier, less preseason games, maybe it's taking a toll. We'll have to see. It'll be fascinating.
I think every season evens out eventually. Mm-hmm. And maybe there's a bit of a shock factor right now with so many seemingly injuries. And then hopefully we get a nice, you know, 8, 9, 10, 11 week patch where we don't see anywhere near as many. But I do have a feeling when it's all said and done, it kind of evens out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. But then I kind of look at it too, as somebody that covers the AFLW, I know it's a big talking point, especially when we had a time, I think it was the last season or the season before, where in the first five games, there were six ACLs. And so there was a lot of discussion about that. So again, it's kind of one of those where it's like, as great as it is to see these superior athletes that are, I mean, they are fine tuned to, I mean, millimeters of greatness, but they put their bodies through a lot of extreme stress, that one little thing and devastating injuries can happen. So yeah, I'm hoping that as the season goes on, we have less of these, because I don't know how many teams are going to get through it if this continues. But it's a scary thing to watch sometimes, especially the Gibkiss knee and then the McDonald knee. And I kind of agree with one person I saw online. It's like, the fact that these TV stations keep going back to the visuals, it's sickening. Don't show it.
Ultra slow motion. Like, what are you doing?
I know. It's like, it's just absolutely, it's sad that they do that. I understand they're trying to show people what's going on, but there's a point when I just kind of go, you're not going to show a leg break like that. Why are you showing an ACL tear or a Achilles injury? Just no, don't do it. So Now that we've had our bummer section of the podcast, we'll try to pick it back up a little bit. And so we'll go to what I call burning questions. These are some things that have went through my head and some questions. I just kind of want to have a discussion on this. And I'll find this very interesting, especially as a Carlton supporter on this one, is round one results now see both last year's premiership team contending teams, Brisbane and Collingwood, both zip and two. Is this a big deal? Or is this just a little blip on the radar because we're only two games into a 24-game season?
I don't know. I don't know. So if we isolate them, I think the Pies just need to find the spark. I think the Lions to me seem frustrated. Both of them have different issues. The Lions seem frustrated, like to go through it again, all over again. They were so close. And I don't know how long that'll take for them to shake it, but both sides have to get themselves into 2024 mode. It's very interesting because Brisbane will have the bye. The Pies will play the Saints. And, you know, the Pies need to get the job done. But if they don't, then they will play off against each other in round three. On a Thursday night.
And so, it could, and if they lose to the Saints, they'll be 0-5 combined.
Yeah. No, look, I think you know, both teams will get back on track eventually. I just think it's the start of the year. I'll give it a few more weeks, and if you know they still aren't winning, or if they still are showing signs of slowing down, then I think you know it may be time for someone else, some other team to jump the queue.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I agree with what one person said, is that I'm not going to go 0-2, but if they lose a third, then it's a pattern. And then I'm a little like, I kind of agree with the most. I think Collingwood has a little bit easier time of fixing the issues because it's an effort thing. It's something that maybe Craig McRae just needs to go whistle. Guys, bring your mouthpieces. We're going to get to work. Yeah. Brisbane's it's almost like, they haven't really learned from some of the mistakes. Like I remember watching First Crack and Joey Montana going, like, some of the issues that plagued them when it comes to situational footy is still bugging them because they're still making mistakes that are easily fixed tactically almost a little bit. And they continue to make them. It's what cost them last year in the grand final. And it's cost them in both the first two games of the year is getting caught structurally not correct. And it's fascinating to me. It's like, it's almost a mentality thing for Brisbane where Collingwood, it's literally between the ears. Like it is an effort thing. Like seeing the point out of Jordan DeGoey and Braden Maynard giving each other a high five as GWS is zooming down the far wing to kick a goal. Like it's bad optics. It just shows there's no effort. And then several times seeing like Isaac Heaney have Lipinski guarding him and he puts 20 meters on it before Lipinski realizes he needs 20 meters past him. So it's an effort and a connection thing for Collingwood. So I think Collingwood can address it a little bit quicker, but I'm with one is that, I mean, if they lose to the Saints, I'm hitting the panic button if I'm at Collingwood, because I think Craig McRae has been talking this entire time about, we're not doing a repeat. We're getting back to work. And I'm like, well, dude, you're saying a lot of things, but right now the guys in black and white are not doing anything to what you've set a standard to. It looks like they're still off celebrating their premiership, which right now Lee Matthews is looking like a genius. He's called you out before the season started. You're 0-2 and your guys are doing things that are not, I mean, plain and simply, your guys are doing stuff that a premiership team that wants to win another premiership wouldn't be doing.
Yeah. Well, I think the Saints are going to bring out Collingwood's game style, because if the Saints are going to play that fast style that they played against Geelong and bring it, you know, to the MCG, that's going to force Collingwood back into how they play. And that's where I think it could awaken Collingwood. Or if the Saints actually believe, oh, they could put him away. Fascinating storyline to watch for this week.
Definitely, for sure. So, which actually kind of is a great transition for me. So I'm going to put a tiny caveat on part of this. Okay.
Okay.
So for this most impressive team so far this season, hold your Carlton Blues out, and when I answer, I will hold my Swans out. Most impressive team so far, and who's your biggest disappointment so far? I know some teams have only played one game. I know, caveat there, but your thoughts on this one. Disappointing and impressive teams.
Oh, impressive.
If you want to think, I can tell you mine.
I mean, look, I have enjoyed both teams from Sydney as impressive. If I was to say, I mean, they've also played one extra game. Most impressive probably would have to say the Swans. Yeah, I would say the Swans. I think the dirty little secret is they're better now without Buddy at this point, at that end point in his career. And you've got to move on. So that's been good to see. I like what I've seen from some of their forwards. Probably still question marks over whether they can be consistent, the key position players in the forward line, but they're on their way. Yeah, I'm impressed with them.
Yeah, it's the depth for me with Sydney. For me, the most impressive team, I can't not, I'll go across the bridge. Some Sydney fans be angry, but GWS, it's hard not to argue. They have, they look sensational. I know that they played a North Melbourne team that's not up to snuff, but how they dismantled Collingwood was almost poetic a little bit again. And it's kind of fun for me to watch that one, because I think Mason Cox really did a lot of billboard stuff that I think GWS put a little bit more oomph into that game than I think Collingwood was probably expecting. So it's hard not to say that's super impressive. Jesse Hogan, I mean, there's Fremantle and Melbourne fans that are sitting there going, why didn't we get this version of Jesse Hogan? I don't know. It's fascinating. And just their role players. It's the Toby Bedfords. It's the Buckleys. It's the O'Hallorans. It's not the Whitfields. It's not the Greens. It's not the Canelios. It's their role players that are just playing out of their skin right now. I mean, Brown is kicking six goals.
Yes.
So it's like, it's hard not to argue. They're super impressive. Again, I know it's two games. There's still a lot of footy to be played, but GWS, I mean, tip my cap to the other side of Sydney. They've been fantastic to watch.
Yeah, they have.
So, and my biggest disappointment is more because I was hoping that they would get their you know what together, and that's the Western Bulldogs. I mean, I got all this talk from Bebo. Riley Sanders is the greatest young talent I've ever seen, and I was not impressed with their performance. I still think they never have addressed their defensive issues. I'm seeing David King and several people going, Aaron Naughton should go back. I'm interested to see if that happens, how that'll
I love
go.
How they do that so quickly. They're so quick to move players out of the team and into the other end of the ground.
Well, David King, he could be an All-Australian center halfback. How do you know that? How do you know that Bevo hasn't put him back and he absolutely is dog back there? How do you know? Like, I almost want to go, dude, do you go to their trainings and he's like this great intercept possession player? Like, flying at a mark as a forward and defensive interceptions are two completely different things. It's a kind of a craft.
That's true.
So
I think my most disappointing, I mean, it has to be Collingwood. I think even Collingwood supporters would say that. I think, I mean, we have some context as to maybe why it's looked the way it has, but I think if you're looking at what they were in 2023 and what they have been in the first two games, I think they've been the most disappointing because they're one of the few teams that has expectations to be one of the top four sides. So, you know, there is still that confidence that they'll figure it out. But I think after two games, that's all we're talking about. That would be my most disappointing.
There's no argument. I think that was the most cranky I've ever seen Craig McRae in their coverage, because he kept going back to the same thing. And I kept saying in the back of my head going, he's like, it's our, and I'm like, dude, right now, everything that you're saying, the people on the field obviously don't know that, because your processes from the end of 2022 all the way through 2023 were magnificent. I mean, you were a team that everybody went, no matter what happens, you knew Collingwood had a chance. In both of these games against Sydney, I mean, it's been over at three quarter time. If you're really honest with yourself, it's been over. Mm-hmm. So this magnificent McRae has the magic worn off a little bit? So I can completely see that. So, and that's not a shot, even as a Blues fan, I know that's that wasn't a shot. Or
I
maybe
like
yes, the
Collingwood.
grin on his face.
I actually really like watching Collingwood play. So I mean, I went to the game on Friday night, the Collingwood Sydney game, expecting it to be an incredible game. That's why I went, and I was disappointed that I didn't get that. And
Yeah, I
I
had
think
trouble
even the
sleeping because I was so nervous about that game. So yeah,
yeah.
I'm 100% with you. So we'll go to the fun part of my podcast is when I have
All right.
somebody who is a avid fan of a club, I give them a question. So I got to ask this.
Let's go.
At Blue Abroad and through all of Blues Nation, how hyped are you? 2-0. I know a little bit nerve-wracking, close games, but 2-0, getting a bye to let those bodies heal just the littlest bit. I know it's only two games. How hyped, 2-0, are Blues Nation?
Oh, we are pretty hyped. I think after opening round, we were very hyped. And but I think, you know, go back to 2022 when our first three games, we were so excited because it was new territory for us. 2023, we were a draw and two wins after three games, and we were still pretty excited, but we knew that we weren't playing our best. 2024, you know, we've been a little bit battle-hardened in, you know, playing in meaningful games and becoming one of the better sides in the competition, or at least in the top half of the competition. So there is excitement, there is hype, but I think the challenge for the first two games, knowing the bye was going to happen straight after, was to get through. I think most Carlton supporters would have said 1-1 and they would have taken it. So to be 2-0 is a big tick, and it almost feels like we've got one against what we thought would happen. So we almost bank one, you know, per se. You know, we've got 4 to 5 guys who I believe are must pick, so like must pick players that have to play. So that's exciting. And you know, Harry's playing good. Harry's playing with confidence. So that's going to make our forward line a lot more dangerous. You know, once you add Wiedering into the back line, and Walsh and Marchbank and Elijah Hollins and these types, you know, we're just building into it. And yeah, I think there's a maturity amongst the Carlton faithful. We're hyped, but we know better not to get too excited too early.
No, I completely understand. And just a tiny bit of question without notice. Any concern that Walsh's injury it keeps becoming a problem? I mean, he had to have that disc removed from his back. Is there any concern that maybe that this is something that could cost him his career because this is it's the continued nerve injury, the continued injury and the soreness in his back, is there
Yeah.
concern that you might lose him?
As in like forever?
Maybe.
Not really. I mean, in my mind, this will be something he has to deal with for the rest of his career. He'll need to be managed. I think the expectations are what has created such a concern, because we all said if he does a full preseason and plays every game, he'll win a Brownlow. And now that we know that that's probably not going to happen, you know, that dream of Brownlow Walsh won't be there. I believe Walsh will be dealing with this for the rest of his career. I believe he had surgery on his back at 22 years of age, and it's tough to do that. I believe he needs to learn how to listen to his body potentially, to you know when to pull back a little bit within himself. But this is footy. You know, Charlie Curnow was out for 2 years and he kept re-injuring the knee, and we all said, oh, how is he going to play 10 games again if he can't even string together, you know, two games in a row? And at that point, we were saying we're never going to see him again, and if we do, he's never going to be the same. So whenever we get Walsh back, we get Walsh back. It's one of those, it is what it is. It's disappointing. You know, it's sad that we don't get to see him play every single game like we want to with the rest of the players, but you know, we've got plenty of soldiers that can step up and, you know, take their opportunity and create some, you know, success for themselves.
Yeah, you can almost do even a management plan of maybe two games max in a row, and then get
Yeah.
and then manage him for a third, for a third week, and just kind of work out the schedule to where you can maybe have him cherry, you maybe have him cherry ripe to where that he can play in finals games, and then he'll have the proper rest between. Yeah, but I agree, it's a little concerning. 22 years old, and you're having a disc removed from your back. It's that's.
Correct.
It's a little frightening. Like I said, all the best to Walsh. He's an incredible player. I hope that they can get it figured out, because he is such a fantastic player. And if you get him in, that makes that midfield of the Blues that much better with Patty Cripps and all that. So we will jump from Blues Nation again. I always like to have a little bit of fun. There's always a smile on my co-host's face when they get to talk about their team in depth, and I absolutely love it. I know blue is running through your blood for sure on that one. So we'll jump to it. You have the bye round this week, so it's almost kind of perfect. Is there a game that you're going to sit down with the popcorn and watch this round that you cannot wait to watch?
Got to be St. Kilda Collingwood, doesn't it? Like, we all got to know what's going to happen with the Pies, and like, is it, you know, is we all want to know. I think the whole league wants to know. What have the first two games been? Are the Saints going to be able to get the job done? And if they do, what are the ramifications for Collingwood? So I think that's the one I'll be looking forward to the most.
I'm also interested on Friday night footy, because I'm interested to see how the Crows respond against the Cats team. And like I said, they gutted out a win against a pesky Saints team, a Crows team that, by all accounts, all the Crows people that I've talked to, it was an insipid performance, and they almost still got a win out of it. So can they bounce back? Can they play well against a Cats team that there have been question marks going into the season? Are they too old? Are they developing young talent with Ollie Dempsey coming in and Tanner Bruin kind of finding his spot now? Dangerfield maybe finally kind of figure out how to be that the man a little bit more in right situations. It'll be fascinating to see. And then, does Tex Walker come back? And if he does come back, how does that change the forward line? Will Isaac Rankin make a little bit more impact? So I'm really looking forward to both of those two games. Like I said, St. Kilda Collingwood, 100% with you. It is almost a must win for the Pies to kind of right the ship, because if they don't, all the questions are going to come for Craig McRae and the Collingwood Magpies. But I'm very intrigued by Friday night footy, Adelaide v Geelong at the Adelaide Oval, because that's going to be a ripping game. Because will Crows faithful start to turn on Matty Nix if they go 0-2 and lose a game at home where they were really good last year, could not find a one on the road? So the sad part is I look at the rest of the slate and I go, not a lot of very intriguing matchups. So we will not focus on that too much. So we jump to the part of the podcast where I kind of take over just the littlest bit. We're still early, so I will not be doing any power rankings. I tell everybody I will not do power rankings until at least round five. That way, all the teams have played at least five games, and we kind of have a form list. But I got to do my teams of the. I got to do my team of the week. I break it down a little bit statistically and watching some of the games. So, over the years, I've kind of changed this a little bit to make it a little bit more fun and a little more challenging for me. Is I actually play guys in all of their positions. I try to be sure. So I will do fullbacks, halfbacks. I will do wings. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, I do wings. So let's hear team of the week for round one. Terry, I'm interested to hear what you think of this. Here we go. Starting in the defensive core and the fullback line, we have Mitch McGovern of the Carlton Blues, Melbourne's Stephen May, and Fremantle's Jordan Clark. And the halfback line sees the Melbourne Demons, Christian Salem, Port Adelaide's Kane Farrell, and West Coast, Liam Duggan. I know West Coast, but I will explain that one if anybody wants to hear why he got into that one. We'll go to the mids. On the wings sees Carl Amon of the Hawthorn Hawks and Melbourne's Jack Billings. In the center circle, I know I'm going to get a little bit of stick for this, but I can't argue statistically that these guys did really well. Sydney's Chad Warner and Sydney's Isaac Keeney, along with Port Adelaide's Connor Rosie. In the ruck sees Port Adelaide's Yvonne Saldo. At the half forward line sees Richmond's Noah Bolta, Essendon's Jake Stringer, and Brisbane's Joe Danaher. And the full forward line sees Logan McDonald of the Sydney Swans, GWS's Jesse Hogan, and Fremantle's Jai Amiss. On the bench, I have one forward, one defender, one midfielder, and one ruck. I know it's kind of odd, but I try to do it as evenly as possible. Fremantle defender, Luke Ryan. Fremantle ruck, Luke Jackson. Midfielder, Essendon's Archie Perkins. And at the forward is Hawthorne's Dylan Moore. I know it's a lot of names. Really, really quickly, your thoughts on that, Terry?
Coach Hess. We've got a Joe Danaher in the team who didn't win a game on the weekend. Harry Mackay won the game on the weekend.
True.
That would be my first one. And Patrick Cripps has to be in team of the week.
I tell everybody here's kind of how I do it. And again, it's kind of obvious when you go through statistics is I put a little bit more on goals, a little bit goals and goal assists. Unfortunately, if I remember right, Cripper didn't have a goal in this game. I know he does a lot. I know there's a lot of people that are kind of like, coach, you got to look at other things besides that.
Who was the other midfielder that you had on the bench?
My midfielder on the bench was Archie Perkins.
How many okay, who are the others?
Archie Perkins, Connor Rosie, Isaac Heaney, and Chad Warner. All together, those four combined for, if I remember correctly, it was 9 goals.
I reckon you got to look at their contested possessions and look at what they're in the team to do. That's win the football at the source, you know.
to each their own. If you give me a solid factual reason, I will take it in. I take no offense to it at all. It's an easy way to kind of separate it. Is that when midfielders kick goals because it's what everybody wants to see. So, so no, I appreciate the feedback. I really, really do. Thanks, Terry.
I want to fly the flag for the skipper. You know,
it is fine. I love Cripper to death. He's absolutely fantastic. I agree with you, Harry Mackay, but I think he only had 2 this weekend. Where it was like I think Joe had 3, Bolta Harry had 3, Stringer had 3. Yeah, and I think was it Logan McDonald had 4, Hogan had 6, Jaya Miss had 3. So it was kind of one of those where.
How about we make a deal?
Sure. Harry kicks this.
Harry kicked 3, actually. We can trade out Joe for Harry.
Okay. Yeah. I like the barter. It's fantastic. I think if I remember correctly, Joe had a few more possessions. I'd have to look a little bit more on that, but that's a good call. I'll give you that one. So right, we always end. I love it. I love when somebody can give me a little bit of stick. I absolutely love it. It's fantastic. So we'll jump to it. I know we're still early in the week. Teams still haven't come out. Injury reports still haven't come out, but we'll have a little bit of fun. Let's tip this week. We'll put a little bit of grain of salt again. We're recording this on Tuesday afternoon for you, Monday evening for me. So we'll jump to it. Thursday night footy. Do the Saints spoil the Collingwood party and make them 0-3, or do the Pies right the ship a little bit before their trip up to the GABA?
I'm going to tip Collingwood at the G and give them another chance. I'm going to tip them at the G and give them another chance. Yep.
I am going to tip Collingwood as well, but I think this is razor thin. I think Collingwood might do another fourth quarter comeback. Yeah. And I think that might find a way to kind of kickstart them. But I think the Saints put the fear of God into them a little bit in this one. I worry Collingwood may get blitzed a little bit early on this one. Just it'd be fascinating for that one. So we'll jump over the Adelaide Oval as the Crows host Geelong at the Adelaide Oval. I'm going to tip the Crows in this one. The Crows are really, really good at home. I think Tex Walker should be back. I think that gives him a bounce back. I think Matty Nix reads his boys the Ryan Act a little bit after an insipid performance. I think the Cats kind of, they scraped by against a Saints team that I think tactically did something a little bit different than they were expecting. It'll be interesting. I think this is going to be who scores last because both teams can put up points and Adelaide's offense is really good. It's going to test Geelong's defense and Geelong's offense is very good. And the Crows defense is still untested really. I think the Crows are just do a little bit too much at home, but this is going to be a cracker. I think we could see 6 or 7 goals kicked by one person on either side because you've got some text. If Tex is back and go Bunta and Jeremy Cameron and Tex and Tommy Hawkins could be a fascinating watch there. Jump to Marvel Stadium as North Melbourne hosts the Fremantle Dockers. The Dockers coming over from the West. Whoops, I almost forgot. What was your tip on the Adelaide Crows Geelong? I'm sorry. I'm starting to fly through this and not even paying attention.
Right, don't worry about me. I agree. I'll go Adelaide at home.
Sorry about that, Terry. I'm like my brain went, I'm starting to go to the next one. Like, wait, I forgot something. Yeah. So like literally on the live podcast, I totally had a brain fade on that one. So we'll do this again. North Melbourne at Marvel Stadium hosting Fremantle coming over from the West. Who do you like in this one?
Gonna do it. I'm gonna tip North Melbourne.
I came really close. I came really close to doing it. I think Fremantle's just got a little bit too much. I like what Jackson is doing, and Caleb Sarong and Brayshaw. I think that they're just a little bit stronger in that center, which I think is going to flip the game. But I agree. I think this is close. I think North Melbourne really puts a scare into this one. Fremantle just barely. So, all right, we'll jump to the MCG. Another interesting one here. Hawthorn v. Melbourne. I'm going to tip the D's in this one, but this could be a fascinating one. Again, Hawks, too many injuries down back for me. You, Terry?
Yeah, in theory, I'm with you on that. Also, Melbourne at the MCG. That is just, it's tough. It's a tough ask for any club. So I will give this one to the D's.
All right, an interesting one up at the SCG as the Swans host the Bombers. Can the Bombers put a scare into the Swans? What do you like? Who do you like in this one?
The Swans.
I will tip Sydney, but I think this is one of those where Sydney has to come. They have to start fast because this is an Essendon team. If you let them stay around, they might get some confidence. No Mason Redmond due to suspension, I think, could hurt them a little bit. Ben the Mackay brother gets tested in this one, even against a young forward line of Armadi and Logan McDonald. Sydney just a little bit too strong. Sydney wins this one. I guess Essendon's in it till the fourth quarter on that one. So Mars Stadium in Ballarat is a fascinating one here as the Suns come down from Queensland. Can the Doggies pull the upset over the Suns, or do the Suns go 3-0? Your thoughts on this, Terry?
I will go with the Western Bulldogs. Just.
The confidence is not high in that.
Not confident at all, but I
will. It is a fun one. I'm thinking the hometown of the home field advantage of the Western Bulldogs might be a little bit to catch the Suns. I think finally the Suns get an opponent that's not that athletically can stay with them a little bit. They're not having the helper of the weather a little bit when it comes to Queensland. So it'll be interesting to see how the weather is in Ballarat for this one. I'm going to tip the Doggies in this one, but this could surprisingly be a good, very good game comes down late in for this one. We will jump to it, to the MCG as the Richmond Tigers host the Port Adelaide Magpies. I'm going to tip Port Adelaide in this one. I think Richmond's injuries, I think we'll get them, but I'm not super confident in this one because Port Adelaide, I'd still like the West Coast Eagles. They're a weird one for me. I'm going to tip them because I think they're stronger. Plus Richmond have a few injuries that I think are going to hurt them, but this is a not confident tip at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm with you on that. I'll tip Port, but Richmond will, if you don't put Richmond away, they'll hang around. Mm-hmm. So if Port Adelaide don't put them away, they run the risk of doing what Carlton did and slipping up.
Yep.
And so I will tip Port.
And then probably the easiest tip of the entire weekend, West Coast Eagles, Optus Stadium via the GWS Giants. Am I jumping too far to go Giants and Giants big in this one?
Surely, right?
Like Jesse Hogan potentially goes west and kicks himself 8 or 9. Like legitimately, he's got a chance for a bag in this one. If the Giants play the way they've played in those first two games, this could get ugly and ugly quickly. So
I think Toby Green's also due for a nice big bag of goals.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the best part about it is they've had Hogan, they've had Brown, they've had Riccardi. So Toby hasn't had to do as much, which I think helps spread the load, which I think is actually a good thing for the Giants, because Toby will come in when he needs to. If it's a big game and they need a big performance, he's usually there. So I it's one of those where it's almost kind of nice. Toby doesn't have to worry about it as much, and they still get a nice little win. So, and unfortunately, your calling Carlton Blues and the Brisbane Lions are sitting this one out this particular week. So
resting up and we'll be back to, when do the games go back to normal where everyone's played the same amount? It's from round 6 onwards, I believe.
I believe you are right, because I believe round 3, if I jump ahead, next week, Gold Coast and GWS have the bye rounds for round 3. In
round 7 is when everyone is back to normal.
Well, round 4, actually, everybody's playing.
Round four, everyone's playing.
Everyone is playing in round four. There are no buys. I believe Sydney's is five. Yep.
Yeah,
Sydney and
Sydney
Collingwood is
Collingwood.
round five.
Okay. Melbourne, Richmond, round six. All right. So round four and round seven is then we start getting Wednesday night footy. And then I'm sure that'll be a topic of conversation.
Yeah, around the Easter holiday is always the fun time of year, because you almost seems like you get at least one game every day during the week, which is kind of fantastic. I liked it. I mean, at least during the pandemic, it gave me something to watch, but that's neither here nor there. It was controversial for some. It wasn't much for me because it gave me something to do. So, oh, Terry, that is it. That is all that I have for this particular podcast. Again, it's always great to catch up with you. I like I said, I may not be a Blues person, but I thoroughly enjoy what you are doing. Just a little bit of what you've been up to for Blue Abroad. I know that you guys do your game reviews. I know you're still connected with Pommy and Oz. Like I said, the besties is humped on there. So just a little bit about Blue Abroad and how to get a hold of anything, all everything and everything Carlton Blues.
Yeah, we are a fan engagement platform, independent fan engagement platform for the Carlton Football Club. I film previews and reviews. I do a lot of live streams. We have a great team, many content creators. You mentioned a few of them there. The Jumper Punch Boys are there. The Navy Blue Corner have been added to the team. We've got young Ari Stamatakos. We've got Lek Dog, who helps with the team's show. Lots of contributors, different Carlton voices with different Carlton experiences. And I don't know what my favorite thing to do is. I really do enjoy the fan cams after a game, because I think we've sort of revolutionized talkback radio after a game, and we've added the video element. But there's something for everyone. And yeah, if you want to come by, and we have a lot of opposition fans that come and tune in as well. So Blue Abroad on any social media platform, wherever you find us, but YouTube is the main place where you want to be tuned in.
Fantastic. Well, and like I said, if you need anybody to ever preview a Swannies match, we've done
yes,
it before.
Sir,
I'd
I've
love
got
to
a good
hop back
coach.
On. I had to admit, I remember the YouTube one after the first time I did it, but so many of them were like, Terry, where'd you find this guy? He's good. Like I had to grin a little bit, because I appreciated the love that I got from some of the Blues fans. That was fantastic. So,
well, you know what? We have the whole Blue Abroad concept, where Carlton supporters everywhere around the world. So whenever we do, we have a lot of Americans, we have people from Spain that call in. So whenever we speak to people who are abroad, whether that's Carlton or not, there's a lot of appreciation. And I think it should also be noted as well. You should be acknowledged. I mean, the way you cover the game, considering you live where you live, you are doing the game a major, major service. And I know that it'll all be worth it in the long run, my friend.
No, fantastic. I appreciate it. So, and then I throw the on changes that I also cover the state leagues now too, which has
Yes,
been
sir.
fantastic to meet some of
Yes.
the fantastic people that are in WA and SA and even in
Yeah.
Victoria with the VFL, which has been fantastic. So that is going to do it for the podcast. Again, ladies and gentlemen, keep track. More AFL. We have VFL sample and waffle coverages still to come. Keep an eye on it. That is going to do it for another episode of Donnie's Disposals. Tune back for more footy coverage in your ears very, very soon.